Whenever I come here, I admire the emotion and the passion. We are excited to be here. So let's get started. The first selection of the 2019 NHL Draft belongs to the New Jersey Devils.
Before we officially begin the post-draft edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast brought to you by the GMC Sierra Denali, I would like to recognize that Jeff Merrick could not be here for this episode. Merrick, who normally drives the bus, hosted round one of a draft on Sportsnet, and we didn't do a podcast after because nothing happened. There was total inertia. So Jeff went home because he's a good dad. He went to go see his kids. I think one of them had baseball and couldn't be here. So, Jeff, you want to go home. You want to be a good dad. Nobody's going to argue with that. Great on you. And disappointed that you weren't here, but you're never going to say, boy, I wish I missed my kid's baseball game to do a podcast. However, it should be recognized that I was 100% correct in my decision not to do a podcast after Friday and do one on Saturday because stuff finally happened. And this is how it's going to go. In a few minutes, we're going to play an interview that we did with Ray Shiro, taped after the Devils made their seventh round pick, talking about the Subban deal. We'll have Sam Cosentino, our draft guru, who was getting angrier and angrier as Brett Leeson was not selected until late in the second round. But first, we're going to start this off with Ace reporter Chris Johnston. He had a heck of a weekend. He started the breaking news on the weekend with the news of the impending Kasperi Kapanen extension for the Maple Leafs. But Chris, what a day on Saturday. What's the first thing you think about when you think about round two at the draft?
I think that some teams actually made some cap room, which, you know, was the biggest thing I was worried about. You know, when Friday night passed, we didn't see any deals, and it just felt like there was inertia, that everything was stuck. And for David Poile to clear up $9 million in cap space, obviously he's losing a great player in PK Subban in doing so. You know, it gives him some room to maneuver now, either in the free agent market or on the trade market. We saw Tampa, you know, resolve some of its cap squeeze with a couple moves. And, you know, obviously the Toronto Maple Leafs had to pay a first-round pick in order to do it with Patrick Marleau. So I sort of come away looking at sort of the teams that are contenders that finally have a little bit of room to breathe and make more moves as we get into the next week here.
Is it a five-star absolute lock of the week that Matt Duchene is now a Nashville Predator?
100%.
Whoa, he's not even leaving any breathing room. 100%. Yeah, the perfect score.
I will admit, I'm putting myself out there a bit because it would be foolish to say that he might not hear something in free agency that could change his mind, that someone might call him or his agents on Sunday at CAA and offer an amount of money that obviously I don't think Nashville is willing to give him. But this has been such a long dance between him and the Predators. You know, no secret of his love of country music, of that city itself where he owns a home, I believe, that the Preds have had their eye on him or involved in the trade discussions with Colorado going back a couple years when he ended up in Ottawa. And so, to me, I really don't see this playing out any other way, but there is the occasional surprise in our business, but I'm going to give it 100%.
Were you surprised when you saw the Subban deal in the return?
I was surprised. It makes a lot of sense. The more I've thought about it, New Jersey's a logical landing place for him. The fact that they were able to take on his entire cap hit is ultimately why the Predators accepted that return. You know, didn't even get a first rounder back, a couple seconds and a couple prospects. But they just weren't really on my radar in those discussions on Friday. You know, we were so focused on the Toronto Maple Leafs having talks on him, the Vancouver Canucks, a mystery other team that I have not identified. I don't know if you've done so, Elliot, in your reporting, but David Poile did say there were four teams at the table, essentially. And when I heard the deal went down, I was surprised, and I was surprised it was the Devils. But, you know, the more you dig into it, it does make a lot of sense, and I'm sure Ray got into all those reasons in your interview with him.
As we sit here just after the draft concluded on Saturday afternoon, I think the teams were Vancouver, Toronto, New Jersey. I haven't figured out that fourth yet.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm trying to think of who it might be. You know, I'll tell you this. I heard a rumor earlier in the week that it might have been Florida. I was told it was not the Panthers. You know, I'm trying to figure out who else it could have been.
Well, we can start at the teams that have cap issues because You know, David Poyle did offer a clue to us by saying that only one team, the Devils, were able to take on the entire salary. So, you know, I don't think we're looking at the bottom half of teams that, you know, have lots of money to spend. But process of elimination doesn't produce me that answer just yet.
It's probably not Vegas.
Safe to say.
It's probably not Washington.
Safe to say.
It's probably not the Winnipeg Jets.
I think that's fair.
It's not the Montreal Canadiens.
No.
So.
Would Tampa do it?
I just don't know how they could do it.
Right.
I mean, I wondered about them. I just don't know how they could possibly do it.
Well, maybe in the way the Leafs were trying to do it, and that's getting Nashville to retain $3 million in salary. You know, maybe somewhere along that line, it could be a team like that, but I'm not sure if we'll ever find out.
We'll find out. At some point in time, we will find out. But as we tape this, it's not right now. Marlo, the Maple Leafs. I have a lot of theories about the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. Would you like to hear them?
Yeah, I'm all game.
Okay, so if you look back at Kyle Dubas' media conference 24 hours before the first round,
Patrick,
he says,
what we're trying to do is just accommodate, I think, a situation that's gone very public since the end of the year, right? So, I mean, all that said, I think if Patrick Marleau were back in with the Toronto Maple Leafs at the beginning of next year, it wouldn't be a problem for Patrick. There's a strong chance he'd be back next season.
Mitch Marner.
And if there were an offer sheet, we would look at what they are and what the compensation is for our team and make the decision based off of that. So if the dollar amount doesn't make sense, both in terms of our internal economics and the marketplace and the compensation is such, it's going to be a decision on our end as to what we do. So I wouldn't know one way or another without knowing more about where those are going to land if they happen.
I think Kyle Dubas decided that his pre-draft message was going to be, there are going to be massive changes if people don't start buying in. I think that was his shot across the bow to some of those guys, particularly the guys like Kaplan and Janssen, saying, look, guys, if Marleau has to come back and we have to let Marner go, those aren't going to be the only changes. Other guys are going too. Look, now they've got a deal, as you reported, with Kaplan. It sounds like they've got a deal with Janssen, 4x3.4. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some bonuses and some upfront money there too, which is what Toronto can do as well or better than anybody else. Marlowe's gone. They got that worked out. And now, you know, we still have the Marner thing, which looks, again, as we record this, like it's totally off the rails. But I think Kyle Dubas was trying to say to people, look, we're going to have to start taking harder lines. If we can't get things done to the way we need to get them done, we're going to make changes and we're going to make difficult decisions. And I think that's kind of why some of these things moved a little bit on the weekend. True or not true?
I actually buy into that pretty much fully. I mean, it's amazing that within 48 hours of those comments, even 36 hours, we get news that the Kapanen and Janssen deals are done. Because, you know, part of what he was saying about Mitch Marner, he included those two players in that. And, you know, you just wonder if they took that signal that it was time to get down to business, make a deal. You know, Kyle Dubas told me that it was imperative that they get some certainty in terms of what their picture is going to look like, what exactly those players make. And now they tackle the biggest question. Well, there's two questions really in my mind. Obviously, Mitch Marner is by far their most pressing need, concern. What is his contract? And then can something be done to their blue line? Because it's totally being overshadowed by all these other things, but Jake Gardner's walking out the door as a free agent, and it wasn't a particular strength to begin with. And so it was a fascinating weekend for the Leafs. I think that they felt a lot of relief, actually, at trading Marleau. They had to pay a heavy price, as we mentioned, but this is the price, I guess, of having good players, good young players especially. And Kyle Dubas said the world's changing. The fact that these RFAs, and we can include Sebastian Aho, Matthew Tkachuk, Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine. I mean, none of these guys have signed. Rantanen in Colorado, restricted free agents that are great players that for whatever reason, none of them has stepped up and signed a contract yet. And we're about to see something unprecedented, Elliot, potentially, if Mitch Marner ends up going and visiting teams. You know, the only guy, the Leafs did some research, the only guy that has ever done it as an RFA and went and visited teams in 10 years is Shea Weber.
Yeah.
Back when he was a free agent, visited the Rangers and Philadelphia, where he signed an offer sheet. But it's not really been an avenue that RFAs have used too aggressively in the past. And it's pretty clear, unless something changes in the next few days, that as of Wednesday when he has the right, that he's going to at least be making calls to other teams.
There's one other person, by the way, who did do it. It was Evander Kane. Before he signed his big extension in Winnipeg, he had a meeting with the Vancouver Canucks and asked them if they would be interested in signing him. So actually, I told this story once on the radio where he basically walked in one day and said, would you be willing to sign me? And people took it to mean like he was on the street. He was walking by what was then GM Place. He walked in and asked Mike Gillis to sign him. And I felt bad because his agent, Craig Oster, called me and said, what the heck did you say about Evander Kane? Because it sounds like he walked in unplanned. And it wasn't. Like, they set it up, and he met with them, but they decided to pass. It was right before he signed his long deal in Winnipeg. But that was not as formal as the Shea Weber thing was. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned should Maple Leaf fans be about the Marner situation?
10 being absolutely freaking out.
Yes.
Steve Dangle yelling into a camera.
Yes. Actually, 10 might even be beyond Steve Dangle. Like,
okay.
Even bigger freak out than Steve Dangle. And 1 is Big Lebowski calm.
I'd put it at about a 3.
And really?
This is why. And you nailed it. I do think as we're talking right now that things are off the rails. Mm-hmm. But it's clear to me that the Leafs have prioritized signing him and that they're going to do whatever it takes to get it done one way or another. And I really don't believe we're going to see an offer sheet on Mitch Marner.
Okay.
I might be wrong, but I've talked to enough people on other teams just gauging how they feel this sort of thing would play out. I mean, look, you're going to have to overpay him if you do it, I think. If you're another team, if you're trying to get Toronto not to match, you're going to have to give him a salary that the Leafs don't automatically just say, oh, yeah, okay, we'll take that. And you're going to have to give up 4 first-round draft picks. And I think the world of Mitch Marner is a player that's certainly not a shot at him. I just think the way the system works, it's very unlikely he gets a formal offer sheet. Now, I might come to eat these words. This is a lot of people listening to this podcast. Maybe someone out there is listening that intends to offer sheet him. But until I see it, I won't believe it.
There's not that many people listening to this podcast. That's number one. Number two, if Mitch Marner re-signs, do you worry about the relationship between him and the team being fractured?
Yes. Just because we've seen this before in sports. You know, it's not unprecedented that you have a team of young players. It's funny, I caught an ESPN 30 for 30 on the Orlando Magic of...
That was a great one.
...an era ago that I kind of had forgotten about. I was a kid when that team was around, but how they thought they were on a path to win many, many championships, and it went wrong for a number of reasons documented in there. You know, I still think that's not going to happen in Toronto necessarily, but there's no guarantee in sports. There's no guarantee for any of us in life. So this is big business, and, you know, remember how this last season started, Elliot, with Brendan Shanahan speaking to reporters on the afternoon of the first game of the regular season. And
when I get together with some of my old mates, you know, from the Cup years in Detroit, we talk about winning together and growing together, and that's what we remember looking back. And, you know, at the end of the day, we all found a way to fit with each other so that we could keep adding to the group. And that's obviously what we are asking some of our young leaders to do.
And, you know, we didn't see William Nylander do that. You know, Austin Matthews didn't do that with the contract extension he signed, and clearly Mitch Marner is not going to now do that. And I don't hold it against the players. It's their careers. I think they certainly have the right to do what they want, but it's possible that things go wrong, you know, after that. I mean, there could be some bad feelings. It might result in other players having to be traded. The reason I put it at a 3 when you asked for the scale is because I think he's going to be a Maple Leaf. But the second part of that is I don't yet know fully what the repercussions are going to be for the roster. And there's a chance it's not just Nikita Zaitsev or someone like that being traded. It could be still, you know, another player that's popular among the team. And so part of being, I guess, a professional and getting paid this money is you have to work through any issues that arise like this. But, you know, I don't think it's a slam dunk that everyone's just going to be thinking, oh, great, you know, good for you, Mitch.
Yeah, you know, I look at it this way. I'm with you. I have no issue with anybody making as much money as they can. You are worth what somebody's going to pay you. And if you want to go for the jugular because it's the best time for you to go for the jugular, I got no problem with that. The thing about this is I can't imagine Marner was happy with what Dubas said. Because as a player, and I understand why Dubas did it. I think Dubas had to come out and say, if you sign the big deal in offer sheet land, we may not be able to do this. You may force our hand. And I'm put myself in Dubas's shoes. At some point, I think you have to do the same thing. I put myself in Marner's shoes hearing that. See, I think that the biggest challenge I think the Maple Leafs have right now with Mitch Marner is how do you get the emotion out of this whole problem? Like,
It's not possible, I don't think.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I know when I've had really nasty contract disputes in my career, I really try to not to get emotional, but when I do, it gets totally in the way. And you need someone in your life. And for me, and you know, I know Krista, your wife, she's probably the same for you. For me, it's my wife, Steph, who will say, Elliot, what the bleep are you doing? Right. Like, you need someone in your life to say, are you sure? These are life decisions. Like, when you're emotional, you make a snap judgment, and all of a sudden, it's affected your entire life. And you need that person in your life to say, are you freaking sure that this is what you want to do? And I hope that Mitch Marner has somebody in his circle that can say to him, are you sure? If he wants to go somewhere else and take it, I got no problem with that. If he wants to stay here and take it, I got no problem with that. He has a chance to be the greatest Toronto-born Maple Leaf ever, which is no small thing.
He could be the greatest Maple Leaf ever.
He could be the greatest Maple Leaf ever. Absolutely, you're right.
I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Auston Matthews. I mean, to me, the two of them are almost, I mean, it's not a competition, but they both have that potential, given what we've seen of them in three seasons already.
Now, the other thing, and so the thing is, all I'm saying for him is, I just hope he's got someone in his life who says, Mitch, take the emotion out of it. Just make sure you're going down a path that you, not anyone else, wants you to go on.
I just had one thought, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem for the Leafs, as I see it, is that this is really about respect. And it's not that I think that they have in any way disrespected him, but it feels as though so much of this is around, you know, he didn't get the full bonuses in his first contract.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't initially get the kind of ice time he would have wanted or people around him would have wanted in the first year. And, you know, obviously he's got two teammates that are paid a lot of money too. And it's, so it's a cap issue for Toronto on one hand, but I think it's how can they give him the feeling that he matters on the same level as those other guys without paying them at that level. I don't know if it's possible, but I do feel that on some level, I think that that's what's driving some of this.
I agree with you on that. I think you're totally right. And, you know, everybody who's listening to this can agree or disagree with what I'm about to say. There was a point in my career where I felt that I was not treated respectfully enough. And it was this I'm talking about before Hockey Night in Canada, because I wasn't necessarily a former pro athlete. I didn't have the same ride to where I needed to go that a lot of other people had. And, you know, for various reasons I'm not going to get into here. Like, you know what I realized, Chris? I had to get over that.
There's a good way to get over it. You're getting older, usually.
Yes.
You get perspective.
You know, that is a great part of it. Well, Samson's getting paid. I'll tell you this, like, and I don't want to go into this a lot, but, you know, as far as things go, I've worked at places, Score, Fan, CBC, Rogers. I've been pretty fortunate the way they've paid me. But I reached points where I'm with you. You have to get over it yourself. I've had good jobs. I've had good positions. I'm at Hockey Night in Canada. The respect comes from people putting you in positions. Maybe I'm not the highest paid guy. Maybe I don't have the number one profile spot, but I'm there. And there's something to be said for doing that. Like, I look at Mitch Marner, okay, and I see a guy who has beaten all of the odds. He's not the biggest guy. And yes, I do think he had to battle a little bit of disrespect at times. I absolutely beat that. But I see a guy in Mitch Marner who has kicked the shit out of anybody who didn't believe in him. Because he's a 90-point guy. He's one of the best players in the National Hockey League. He's about to make a ton of money. That guy could be a Hall of Famer. like, would anybody be surprised the way he's going if in 20 years that guy's in the Hockey Hall of Fame? As far as I'm concerned.
He just had the best individual season since Matt Sundin for the Leafs, and he's 22 now.
Yeah, like, he's won. He's 22 years old, and he has won.
He's got the world in his hands, too. I mean,
absolutely.
He's beloved.
That guy is a winner. That guy is a champion. He doesn't win the NHL level, but he's won a Memorial Cup. Like, I am telling you right now, like, if I was starting an NHL team from scratch, he'd be rocket high on the list of players I'd be looking at to have on my team. Because I see a guy there who has beaten every odd and has beaten everything. He's a stud. And there was a time in my life I needed somebody to say to me, Elliot, grow the bleep up. Don't look at what you don't have. Look at what you do have.
Right.
And the person who said that to me put me in a great spot. Again, I will not begrudge Mitch Marner's choice one way or the other, but I just see a guy. That guy was bred to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. And I hope he stays one because I think it's for him. It's the best place for him to be.
I hope he's happy, too.
100%.
I don't pretend to know him on a personal level. You know, we have the normal dealings we have with players in the dressing room. I don't have a relationship with him beyond that. And I don't know if he's unhappy. I really don't know. But it just feels like there's a lot of negativity swirling around all this.
Yeah.
And really, he should be having the time of his life. And let's face it, no matter what the contract is, you know, his kids' kids will probably be looked after. I mean, he's going to sign a monster deal, and you're right, he's earned it.
He's earned, and he treats people great. He does. You see him throwing pucks and some of the stuff he's done with the young fans. He does great charitable things. That guy, to me, that guy's a winner.
And his teammates love him too.
And his teammates do like him.
And I think Kyle Dubas is genuine in his love. I don't ever feel when he's talking about Mitch that he's doing it as part of a negotiation ploy. Like, this is tough business. I mean, this is the problem with the salary cap in some ways, a hard cap. Is you have to make these kind of decisions, and you know, he's getting squeezed right now a little bit.
All right, let's do a couple more. Let's do Vancouver. So we're here at the draft. We'll talk about their picks with Sam in a few minutes. I liked what they did in their first couple of rounds. There was a lot of rumors that there was going to be a Tyson Barrie deal, and then when they made their pick and they weren't sliding back, we realized that wasn't going to happen. I do think they were in the Subban thing a lot more than they let on. And they made the one JT Miller trade.
They have added JT Miller. We knew that they had included picks. Now we know which picks have been included. Vancouver not only gave up a third rounder in this year's draft, they've given up a conditional first round pick in order to bring JT Miller to town. It will either be next year or the year after that Vancouver's first round pick is the property of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Basically, if the Canucks don't make the playoffs next year, the pick moves to 2021. So if the Canucks are a lottery team next year, they will have a pick in the first round. If they make the playoffs, Tampa Bay gets Vancouver's first rounder next year.
What was your reaction to the Canucks weekend?
I think it was pretty good all in all. You know, there's reason for, I think, at least modest concern about the price in the JT Miller deal, just because the first round pick they gave up potentially could be a lottery pick. If they don't make the playoffs next season, it slides to 2021, but there's no protection on it in that year. And so, you know, that's the window clearly where they have to be competitive and they have to be making the playoffs to make it a non-story. So, you know, I do have a little bit of mild concern with that, but, you know, all in all, you can see him slotting easily into their top six, you know, a former 50-point guy in the league. And, you know, they needed some help there. They got Alex Edler's deal done. I liked the way they kept that to 2 years, ultimately. I think it was a good compromise solution to get that contract across the finish line and keep a franchise cornerstone in place. And, you know, you get the feeling they wanted to do more. You know, there's a certain pressure that comes with hosting the draft that almost goes beyond just the pressure all these GMs face in building the best team possible. And you want to put on a show. But I do feel, Elliot, as though they should come away from here feeling good about things. And Sam, I'm sure, will talk about their first-round pick. But from the indications, that could be a home run if, you know, a bit bold. But there could be a lot of upside there with that selection.
They got to be going after D. Jake Gardner, you think Canuck?
I think it could work. The other team on him I'm wondering about is Detroit.
Oh, you think so?
I'm not saying that they're there, that he's going to visit them or anything like that, but you know, I do wonder if there's a fit with the Red Wings and Jake. Wonder about Montreal, maybe.
Do you think Jake Gardner wants to play in Canada anymore?
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. You know, Minnesota kid, so
yep.
You know, I do think he loved his time in Toronto. At least had cap space. I think he'd probably have been extended last summer. Vancouver makes a lot of sense to me.
If you could have Myers or Gardner, who would you take?
I would want to go with Gardner, I think, at this stage. I mean, look, there's one big answer here that we don't really have a clear picture of is where his back situation is, how concerning that should be.
Yep.
Now, he didn't have surgery after the season, so on the surface that appears to be a positive sign that what ailed him late in the season isn't still bothering him. But I just think with the way he skates and moves the puck, the way the game is going, that to me, I would pick him, especially if you got a team as the Canucks do with some skilled forwards. I just think it makes a lot of sense, and that's frankly what he did for the Leafs so well since Mike Babcock got there. Is, you know, he was on the ice with their top players, and they played a lot of offense when he was out there.
I think they're going after one of those two guys. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Myers too.
I'm not down on Tyler Myers.
No. I'm just saying, like, if you could pick one or the other, I think they're going hard after one of those two guys. You know, I'll tell you something interesting. After Subban got dealt, someone said to me he thought Zaitsev was like a July 5th deal, that Toronto sees where everything lands, and then they move Zaitsev to somebody who's going to need him. After the Subban trade, someone said to me now he thinks it could be sooner.
Wow. I mean, one of the issues is part of his signing bonus is due July 1st.
Yes.
So he's just easier to move on July 2nd as a result of that, because the price to acquire him and what you got to pay him is a little less. That would be interesting. I mean, look, he still has to go, in my opinion. I mean,
he's going.
How much are they going to have to pay to trade him, do you think? I mean, if the first round pick is what it costs to get rid of $6.25 million, what's it cost to get rid of $4.5
million? We'll see. I mean,
people value, I think, as a commodity,
yes,
too, as a player. It's not just a contract.
I really thought that Zaitsev would be easier for them to move than Marleau. But we'll see. My theory could be totally wrong. We'll see. Okay, so we've got, what do we got coming up here? We got free agency. We've got the visiting period. Bobrovsky and Panarin are expected in Florida on Monday.
Dale Tallon told me, tell these free agents to bring their sunscreen.
That's right.
He wants everybody down in South Florida there.
So Bobrovsky, Panarin, what's your early pick?
Ooh.
Florida or Islanders?
My heart is telling me they both end up in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Your head is telling you?
Also that. I don't know any difference at this point. It's been a long playoff run. So
the one, you shrunk, and so now they're together. The one thing that a couple guys have said to me is, the fact that the Islanders haven't signed Lee and Leonard
tells you something.
Tells you that they're going after those two guys. Now, someone told me Colorado was going to go after Panarin.
Wow. I mean, Colorado is going to be the overlord of this league at this point. It just feels like everything they touch turns to gold.
I heard that Colorado is going to take a run at Panarin. I mean, the Rangers will take a run at Panarin, too. The other thing, too, is someone said to me that Zuccarello, if Colorado doesn't get Panarin, they think that it could be Zuccarello.
Interesting.
Now, I had heard rumblings that Colorado was in on Jonathan Drouin, and some guys told me that wasn't happening.
Well, when you looked at their team this year, I mean, they had a pretty good year. They just didn't really have what you call an NHL second line. They just didn't have quite enough depth at the high end of their forwards. Obviously, the top guys, you know, all had great seasons. And so you can understand why they feel that's the place to add. And free agency is tricky. You know, the guys usually, I think we're going to see some pretty big contracts out of this time, even though there are cap-strapped teams. And you know, they have to find a way to make all that work. But I wouldn't mind playing in Colorado with what they got coming and lifestyle and all that.
Okay, give me a team. Joe Pavelski.
Chicago Blackhawks.
Anders Lee.
Minnesota Wild.
See, I think Minnesota will battle for both Lee and Pavelski with Chicago. I could see that. Robin Leonard.
Whew.
I think it depends on where Bobrovsky goes.
For sure. I mean, who needs goaltending? Carolina has an unresolved situation.
Yep. You know, Leonard will be a fascinating negotiation.
I mean, he had a fantastic season.
Yes, he did.
I can't even give you a team for him because I really don't have a sense where that one's going.
Well, you got to think if the Islanders feel they're not getting Bobrovsky, they're getting Leonard done, right?
Right.
So if it doesn't get done, you got to wonder, okay, do the Islanders think they're getting this guy?
Right. And I mean, this is weird. We have such a long runway now until July 1st. I mean, it's 6 days essentially, you know, that they can talk to players at this point.
Any other free agents you're wondering about?
I'm actually pretty interested in Corey Perry just because it's sort of a very unique case, you know, buying out him. No one knows for sure what he has left. Obviously, it's significant injury this year that he was recovering from. But, you know, a few guys have told me that they think it'll be pretty competitive for him, that there'll be teams out there that want to give it a go. So I'm curious to see where he ends up. I'm trying to think of anyone else.
Somebody told me Nashville, but now if Duchesne goes there, I don't know. I mean, the one I'm really watching is Zucker. Zucker and Spurgeon from Minnesota. You know, Zucker's wife, Carly, took a big run at the Wild on Twitter on Friday night.
I missed that.
It's a tough situation. And I think there's a lot of interest in Zucker. I've heard the Leafs had been interested. Now that everybody looks like there might be signing, I don't know. I heard Edmonton. I heard Washington. Like, I think there's a lot of interest in that guy.
He's a great skater.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Pittsburgh had interest in him, too.
Yep. And Spurgeon, you know, we'll see. I think there's a lot of teams that would love to have Spurgeon. Thanks for pinch hitting.
This was awesome. Thanks for having me.
You know, I got to tell you, CJ is a total trooper. He did a hit with Irv Gafar after the draft. Comes up here and did this, and now he's going to run his Leaf story, which is going to be on sportsnet.ca sometime on Saturday night. CJ, we really appreciate you pinch hitting. We have some lovely parting gifts for you. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. We have a bottle of water, and there's one fruit drink left, which you are welcome to help yourself to. By the way, Ryan O'Reilly won the Conn Smythe Trophy, but the true playoff MVP was Chris Johnston, who traveled the whole playoffs and did not have a drop of alcohol. That is an MVP-level performance. 77 days. All right.
I couldn't do it.
That voice belongs to Sam Cosentino. We're going to take a timeout. Sam Cosentino. Sam, we're going to hear from Ray Shiro. And then after we hear from Ray Shiro, we're going to come back and we're going to hear from Sammy. And we'll take a look at the draft and his thoughts and some of the things he liked and some of the things he didn't like and how mad he was that Brett Leeson lasted until the 56th pick of the draft. This is 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnston, Sam Cosentino, and in honorary support of Jeff Mann.
Subban is traded today from Nashville Predators to the New Jersey Devils. The return coming back, Steven Santini, who was a former second-round pick, Jeremy Davies, who is still playing college hockey, a former seventh-round pick, and two second-round draft picks, one of those already traded again by the Nashville Predators. He's been out there for too long. We've been hearing about Subban potentially being on the block for the better part of the last year in Nashville. So to see him dealt at this draft really isn't surprising.
First thing I want to say is that how good that PK was for the Predators, both on and off the ice. I would say in the last 3 years that he's been with us, that's probably equals or probably exceeds any of the best three seasons we've ever had in our history. And he was a big part of that, you know, Stanley Cup Finals, two conferences, division winners in a row. He was great on the ice, and equally, if not more important, he was fabulous off the ice. I mean, he's a magnet for attention, for selling the game, and doing a lot of really good things. Just really good things. The energy that he brings to any team, I think it's going to be fabulous for New Jersey and their market. And from that standpoint, it's kind of disappointing to, you know, to be trading him. Having said that, in this day and age, there's certain things that happen need to happen in a cap era. Our team was trending in a certain way with our contracts that we needed to make some decisions going forward, and that's what we did today.
I guess the easiest way to start this, Ray, is you take us through it. How did this evolve?
In around the draft, for a week or two, you're always touching base with teams, and everybody knows if the team's kind of up against it cap-wise, and Nashville's one of those teams, and they have obviously a really good team and a really good defense, and it's just a matter of talking to David over the last week or so, and certainly, you know, he wasn't sure what he was going to do. Just a lot of moving parts, I guess, for him and what he might want to do. So when he mentioned it to me, obviously we were interested in it. So it was more over the last 5 days maybe. But there was, you know, certainly other teams, I'm sure, and I didn't know at the end whether he would keep PK or do something else with him. And so really it was last night, you know, he was trying to make a decision, and he said, I'll call you last night, and he didn't. So I got up this morning, and that's not like David, really. So so this morning I was having coffee with Josh Harris, and he called me and, of course, apologized for not calling last night, but he just said, listen, here's where we are. I'm not going to wait on something else that I'm looking at, but if you want to do this, I said, yeah. And he goes, okay, meet me over the rink, and we're going to do it. And I go, we got a deal then. So that was it. And it was, you know, to me, it was as you started getting momentum, and you dive into it. And I said this to Josh Harris and David Blitzer last night, their managing partners, is that because if this doesn't happen, I'd be really disappointed. Of course, it happens all the time with the deals, I guess, but I was, you know, something that, when it became apparent that we're in it, and if they were going to move him, we really want to try to get him. And but he was looking at different things, and, you know, we had picks. We had give him cap relief, obviously, and so that's really the basis of it, but you just never know if it's going to work out or not, and fortunately it did, and, you know, certainly puts us in a better position, and for David's trying to do in terms of cap space and moving forward, you know, so maybe that's good for him as well.
It sounds like you talked about in your general media scrum about how this evolved even further after Jacob Trouba went to the Rangers. Had you decided that at some point this week you were adding a veteran defenseman?
We were looking at this. It's, you know, as you know, Elliot, it's not, they're not just grown out of trees, off trees here. And we wanted to make sure if we, you know, we had a list of guys. We talked to various teams that, you know, had for some particular reason, whether a guy had 3 years left, 1 year left. And we talked to all these teams. But at the same time, when I was talking to David over the last probably 2 days in particular, you know, if I was going to get into something like this, you know I had a second round pick, but I had three of them. And then he said, it's got to, you know, if I'm doing this, I need to know where you are. So it's, you know, it's got to be 34. And a second next year, and it's going to be this, and yes, for some different players, but, you know, we really wanted the two defensemen, Santini and Davies, and we wanted to try to upgrade our defense, but at the same time, you have to be realistic sometime where it's not going to be there, and okay, they have to be patient, and I, you know, certainly on the Winnipeg thing, yeah, I'm sure a lot of teams were interested in including us, but okay, it wasn't there, so you have to be patient and try to take advantage of it, but we had assets and cap space, and that's a sort of different deal we could offer David than maybe other teams that, you know, didn't have the cap space or draft picks, so it worked out for us, and we'll work out for David as well.
All right, I want to show you. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but this is PK Subban's new Twitter handle. I thought you'd get a good laugh at this if you hadn't seen it already.
Oh, my God, that's great.
Really?
That is fantastic. Yeah, he's got love his enthusiasm. Love it.
What kind of research goes into it? You told the general media that you spoke to Taylor Hall and you spoke to Brian Boyle about it. How much investigation would you do into someone as opposed to any other player?
I think you try to deal with anybody. It's, you know, it's one of those things is that, you know, with Taylor knows him, but I didn't, you know, I didn't want to breach the confidentiality I have with David. So, I mean, PK's name started to get out there a bit. Yes. I don't think he was ever associated with the Devils, which was good. But I said, hey, Taylor's name's out there. Like, you know him. What do you think? And it was, I didn't know what to expect, but he was, yeah, he a great guy. Really? Like, if there's a chance, I'd love to play with him. And with Brian, Heinze was talking, I think it was Heinze was talking to Brian, because I was talking to Taylor, and it was yesterday, we came over the draft, and Brian, and it was really important, too, because Brian Boyle, I mean, obviously, I think the world of Brian, and he knows us, he knows our room, he knows, and he's been with, he's been in that room, and what he's like, and what he's like on the ice, and put it this way, from Taylor Hall and Brian Boyle, there was actually zero hesitation. Recommended this to Josh and David.
How much goes through your mind, like, if I make this deal, Hall's going to feel better about extending?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I always want to do what's, you know, a good deal for us and the team, and he's part of the team. And again, I think, you know, coming into this, by winning the lottery and, you know, Jack Hughes, and certainly we're a better team now, PK Subban, and you know, and that's why, you know, about sitting down with Taylor, it wasn't happening before July 1. I mean, it's going to happen later in the summer because we want to see where the dust settles. If we don't do anything, where are we? What are we doing? If we do this, okay, still, okay, here's where we are. And there is no rush. We're very transparent with each other, very upfront and honest. And that's been the relationship for 3 years with Taylor, which is really good. And, you know, when I told Taylor, we'll just kind of see what happens, that was yesterday. And that's all I got back from him today.
And it's just, so you know, it's a check mark, the green done check mark.
Yes, exactly. That was so that's good. And no, it's good. And you know, PK is, you know, he's reached guys have reached out to him. He's reached out to Jack Hughes, and you know, coming into New Jersey with Jack is great. And but he's, you know, he just turned 30 years old, and I love the enthusiasm he brings. I love you know, he's got the personality obviously, but he's a good player. He's a competitor, and I love. I always say this: I love working with people that are different than me. In this case, as a player, well, he's different than me. Like he's different than some, but I like that, and I like the fact that I don't think the Devils have, you know, despite three Stanley Cups and a great run, it's, you know, the personality type part is okay. We're part of the entertainment business too, and we're in New York, and we're, but again, it's we're bringing in a guy that wants to win, is competitive, and you know, certainly has been part of World Junior Gold, Olympic Gold. He's got almost gotten there in the NHL, obviously, and. It's a good day for us, and I'm really excited after talking to PK how excited he is, but as appreciative as he was being in Nashville, because I was there for 8 years and how great it is. And but I think it's for us, it's a really good thing, and we're really looking forward to it.
Last one for you. You and David Poile, it's well known that you guys have a long relationship. How are you with each other when you're negotiating this kind of deal? Because he's got a reputation as a grinder, and you've got a reputation as a grinder, but you're friends. So
exactly.
How do you do it?
It was funny. Like, we haven't made hardly any deals, and I think the Brian Boyle one, he kind of surprised me when I said, David, like, you know, we got a week or two to go for the deadline. I mean, I think the price is a second-round pick if I move at him, and I want him to put in a better spot than not, so I haven't really started. He goes, well, I'll give you a second-round pick. I'm like, is this David Poile? Really? We agreed right away. But it was more important that I, with Brian and Lauren Boyle, it was like, I thought that was a great place for them, and I wasn't shopping it like, okay, this, I thought that was fair value. And but even, you know, David is, you know, I learned a lot from David, obviously, but it was so funny because if you think I grind people. So one agent said to me, you know, that Brian Poile, his son, has been working and doing it, obviously assistant GM now with David, and done a great job, Boston College, and he went to school there. Brian does a great job, but one agent said to me, he goes, man, you got to be kidding me, man. You know what? I found one guy that's cheaper than David Poile. I'm like, oh, God, who? Thinking he's going to say me. He goes, no. His son, Brian Boyle, is cheaper than David. I'm like, oh, God, that's good. I'm not even in the top two anymore. I like it. So, no, it's, yeah, it's good. And it's, David's really, obviously, and really, I found David at the draft in terms of moving picks, moving down value of this. I learned a lot from him. I mean, there was a, when I first got the National, I'm like, what the hell? And we'd be, after a draft sometime, be sitting there and I'm packing up, and David's like, you can't go yet. I'm like, what? He goes, sit down. I'm like, he goes, what the hell do we do anyway? Like, moving picks here, moving this, moving picks into the next year. And so he's trying to add it up. I'm like, God. But he's creative, and it's, you know, it was good. But through that process, I mean, obviously, with even a player of PK's caliber, and the only thing I could represent to Josh Harris and David Blitzer is that, just trust me, because he's not going to lie to me. He'll get back to me. He promised he'll get back to me no matter what. And that's all you can ask for. And, I mean, I can't drive the deal. It's his player, and I got to wait on him, and that's the way it is. But we're not going to read about it on Twitter or something. It's, he'll get back to us. And he did, obviously, and I thought it was going to be, I'm going in a different direction. You want to do this or not? Yeah? So that's how it worked out. But it was, there was a trust thing there, but I knew he had to do what's best for his franchise and what he's trying to do. And but I trusted that he'd just be upfront, and if it didn't work out, there was no hard feelings. I mean, he had to do what's best for him. And but it was really good just because of, obviously, the trust factor, but knowing that you had to do what's best for your own franchise. So
thanks very much, Ray.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thirty-One Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali, complete with the world's first six-function multi-protocol gate. Hockey season is over for most, but spring is here, which means baseball, soccer, and road trips. The Sierra Denali's gate comes with a built-in load stop to keep whatever you're traveling with in place and turns into a step for easier access. And once you arrive, it can also become a work surface that includes a power outlet. So whether you're loading a tackle box, working on a project, or tailgating at the game, we've got you covered. GMC Sierra Denali, we are professional grade. All right, hope you enjoyed the conversation with Ray Shiro. Thanks to Amal Delic, our producer, who set that up, with Peter Albeets, who runs media relations for the Devils. Right after they finished their seventh-round selection, their last pick of the draft, came over. We did this, and it was pretty funny. What we're going to do, by the way, is We're going to send out with the podcast. I took a picture, in case you missed it, of PK Subban's new Twitter photo, and just in case he changes it before it comes out, so you can see what Shiro was laughing at. And it was nice of him to share the text message emoji from Taylor Hall after the deal was done. So we're joined now by Sportsnet's draft guru, Sam Cosentino. And Sam, we're going to start. I like to pay my guests a compliment when I start, before I start roasting them and telling them nice. How terrible they are. So the draft, we were on air 4:30 local time in Vancouver on Friday, and at 9:30 in the morning, we had our last draft meeting, an hour and a half draft production show, and they were talking about the picks, and Hughes won and Kako two, and you were adamant that Kirby Doc was going 3 to Chicago. You were like 99% sure it is done. And I will tell you, I doubted you. I doubted your sources. No, I didn't. I knew you'd be right. But how did you know? What did you have?
Well, you know what? A lot like what you do when you're breaking stories and you're talking to different people, the amount of people you talk to from various angles that come at it, sometimes it's a scout. Sometimes it's a general manager, assistant general manager. Sometimes it's the agent. Sometimes it's the family. So all these things come into play. Sometimes it's the coach of the, in particular, a junior team where I get to spend a lot of time, or a general manager of that junior team. So you try and work all the angles to figure stuff out, and sometimes stuff just falls in your lap.
Yep.
So there was one particular gentleman I had done some favors for in exchanging information, and that particular person shared that information with me and shared that information that he was pretty confident about that pick. I was stupid because he shared it before I did my mock draft, and I didn't put that in my mock draft. No, I got some other late information. I thought, you know what? I'm going to take a bit of a flyer here. Stupid, because when I went back and considered the source and where the source might be with the other source, was probably going to be Kirby Doc. So when we circled back, I was pretty confident that that was the case, and it's kind of how it goes. You know how it goes.
Okay, I got a couple questions out of this. First of all, number one, the favors that you did for the source, they involve like washing his car or painting his house?
Painting the house.
Okay, good. Yeah. Secondly, when a source gives you information like that and you don't use it or you don't pay attention to it, do they ever call you up and say, what, are you doubting me?
That conversation happened on the floor today.
It's because yeah. I've had that.
Like, you're an idiot. What are you doing?
Yes.
If you consider who I am, who I know, so on and so forth, you're an idiot. Not quite to that extent, but yeah, that happened on the floor today before the draft started.
That's
the
awesome.
Day 2. Yeah, that's funny.
That's awesome. So for what you predicted and what eventually happened, how did you feel about your ratings, your work, how well you'd prepared?
When you look at, I think it was 26 out of 31 when you look at the total number of players, the order was all over the map. And there were a couple of reasons for that happening. So first of all, you had two teams with new general managers who were working off of dual lists.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Yzerman with Detroit, Kenny Holland with the Edmonton Oilers. Then I looked at where was the goalie going to go? Where was Pod Colson going to go? What was going to happen at number 3? So all those three things, other than the goaltender Knight, who I projected to go to Florida, the other two things were somewhat of a wild card situation. So, in all, pretty happy with the names. Just the order was really difficult to figure out. So you hit here and there. I mean, I had Beecher going to Boston at 30. I was pretty confident that Don Sweeney likes
his
players.
By the way, I gotta tell you, I could not believe that guy was 18 years old. That guy is a beast.
He's a beast. Oh, yeah. And I think Boston's most recent experience probably led to making that pick, you know, going up against a really heavy St. Louis team in the Stanley Cup there. So, you know, overall, happy with the number of names. I was having another conversation with some guys from New Jersey today. Hey, how many did you get right? Ah, you know what? You got the number. The number was pretty good. The names were jumbled all over the place.
What was your biggest miss?
You know what? I had really good intel on Nolan Foote. And again, I didn't take advantage of that information. But I've watched Nolan quite a bit, even going back to when he was 15 years old. And I know the goal-scoring ability is there, and I know the hockey bloodlines are there, of course, and there's good connections to the hockey world. But he's been an injury-plagued guy, and I do worry a little bit about his skating. Having said that, Tampa intimately knows the family, intimately knows his brother Cal. The same issues plagued Cal when he was drafted. Is he going to be able to skate good enough? Well, the guy had feet double the size of mine. I think size 13 skates. So it takes a while to grow into that. And I think Nolan's a lot the same way. And so they project that as being something that's not only is he going to grow into as he gets stronger, but that's something that you can fix. And knowing the Foot family the way I do, they're going to expend every resource possible and made available to them to try and, I don't want to say fix it, but to improve in that area of his game.
Okay, so today, so we did the show together on Friday night on Sportsnet, and today you joined the NHL Network's panel with Jameson and Brian Lawton and Dave Reed. And as Brett Leeson wasn't getting taken, Brian Burke was standing next to CJ and I, and he's like, Sam's going to be going bananas. Like, yeah. He's been all over Brett Leeson. And the moment after he said that, you called Brett Leeson on air the steal of the draft for whoever takes him. What is with all of your man love for Brett Leeson?
Yeah, well, you know what, Elliot? A lot of in-person viewings. So, you know, I don't pretend to be a scout. I've always said that. But when you see a guy with your own eyes on multiple occasions and you see what he does on all of those occasions, you kind of think, like, what am I seeing that everyone else isn't? So obviously I'm sitting up in the booth and not sitting down on the floor and making those selections. But every time I saw Leeson, and I want to say it was 10 to 12 times this year live and in person, he creates scoring opportunities. And he just doesn't do it on the rush. He just doesn't do it off the cycle. He's able to do it with his ability to knock pucks down and neutral ice, to strip pucks in the way Mark Stone does, and to be very disruptive on the breakout. So being able to do those things in three zones is very impressive. One game sticks out to me in particular. I think it was the 5th of April. It was game one, round two, Saskatoon against Prince Albert in Prince Albert.
He has Montgomery out of the circle. Leeson comes in and wins it. Masella right point. Feathers a shot through. Rebound. Leeson scores. Brett Leeson finds the rebound. 2-1 Prince Albert. What a shift. Leeson out of the corner in front. Backhand glove save. He'll leave it for Reese Harsh. Harsh up the wall. Lost that one to Brett Leeson. Leeson in front. Oh, alone. Montgomery scores. What a shot. Gregor left side. Leeson backdoor. Kelly scores. Parker Kelly. What a shot. Short side. Power play goal, his second of the night.
The Raiders won 6-1 that night. He had 2-2, and I swear to you he could add 8 points. But more to the point, in that game in particular, he blocked shots, he won draws, he used his body to go to the net, he created more opportunities in all three zones with transition and his ability to, you know, work in the offensive zone. And with all due respect to Alexi Protas and Sean Montgomery, his teammates, Montgomery's an overage player, good player at the junior level, but probably doesn't have huge pro aspirations. Alexi Protas was taken in the draft today, largely because people were going out to watch Leeson so much, but kind of a lumbering, bigger guy with good puck protection skills, so on. So it wasn't like he was the guy who was a passenger on the line. He was driving the line. I think his ability to consistently create offense is one thing that sticks to me. The next thing is, very raw. For an older guy, he's raw. No hockey-specific training until last year. He worked on his skating a little bit, but now let's work on the edge work, the puck protection. Let's work on some of the other things that are going to make him a better player. And if he has the will to do that, and I guess that's the one big question mark that all the scouts I've talked to, if he has the will to do that, I think you're looking at a guy who's a second-line guy minimum all day in the NHL.
All right, let's take a look at this. Give me a couple teams you thought, nice drafts.
I'm just going to hammer it out here and look at some of the teams. So I'm going to go to Carolina first.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Ryan Suzuki. Here's a guy who was projected to go higher than where he went at 28. Excellent playmaker. He needs to take his game interior more. He needs to shoot the puck more. That's based on the advice of Hall of Famer Dale Hawerchuk. Pyotr Kochetkov was the goalie they took in the second round. I watched him in our Canada-Russia series. I watched him at the World Juniors where he's named goalie of the tournament. And he's a 99 born. So he's 2 years beyond where a lot of most goalies are taken. For me, it's a 5 to 7 year path to get that goalie to play in the National Hockey League when you're drafted in your first year of draft eligibility. 2 years later, you shorten that window. I love his athleticism. The big problem with this guy is, some teams have told me that there's predictive future injuries, especially in the lower body. Maybe they're the typical goalie things, groin, hips, so on and so forth, but some think that that might be a chronic issue, and I think that's where there was pause for thought. I did hear Carolina, rumors about Carolina taking him with the 28th pick, When that didn't happen, they waited until 36, and he was still there for him. So really impressed with that. Jameson Reese is a guy who's got a never-ending motor, plays in Sarnia, lacerated kidney, forced him to miss 2 months. A suspension when he came back after that forced him to miss 8 games. But he's got a never-ending engine. He's played really well with Canada in the summer at the under-18s, and again here at the end of the year in the April under-18s. Anthony Honka and Patrick Puistel are Finnish players, both guys who early in the year up until January were considered as first-round potentials. That didn't happen. Honka, we know his brother Julius, hasn't worked out well for him. Similar type player, a little bit of a riverboat gambler. Puistola's got great hands, great offensive instincts, a guy who's had some inconsistencies in his game. I want to move down to the fifth round. Kirill Slepets is a guy who played for Russia, led their team in goals at the World Juniors. Excellent speed at the very least. I think he can be a PK guy down the road. And lastly, Blake Murray, taken in the sixth round, 30-goal scorer, had 5 goals in his first 19 games for Sudbury and then lit it up the rest of the way. A guy who was projected to be a goal scorer, but one of those guys who really take the draft year to heart. Mm-hmm. And I think he struggled with that early on, but had a great finish to the season.
Anyone whose draft you didn't like?
Ooh, okay. So Boston's a team I'm gonna look at right away. So John Beecher's a guy they took in the first round. You just said to him, he looks like a beast. No question about it. Great skating ability, at the very least a third-line PK guy. That's his basement, so I think people really like that about him. Where's his ceiling? That's questionable. Did his offense get suppressed playing on a team loaded with star players? There is potential for that to have happened. The rest of the guys, to be perfectly honest with you, I just don't know a lot about them. And when I look at how they've drafted under Don Sweeney, they like to go to their American players, and they kind of go all over the map. I like what was put in place for them. But we'll see moving forward how things work out. I think about the year when Jake DeBrusk was selected. Jakub Zboril was taken there. Zach Sinishin was taken there when they had the 3 picks in a row. Zboril and Sinishin have had trouble kind of making their way through. And I do believe that was the first draft under Don Sweeney, if I'm not mistaken. So, again, still some time to see how that plays out. But that's a team that they've got a really good core. And to see if they're going to be able to continue that moving forward or if it's like the LA Kings where you have that stopping point. And at some point, you have to get into the reset. So Boston would be a team that I would question, but hard for me to do that with great authority since I don't know the other 4 players that they took after Beecher. But I do like Beecher. I do think he's an NHL player. Where his ceiling lies, I'm not so sure.
Okay, what else you want to talk about from this draft?
The volatility of the first round. Moritz Seider taken at 7. 6, sorry. Yes. 6.
Iserman, the interview was so funny. He threw us a curveball. Oh, yeah. We don't think it's a curveball.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, the first true curveball of the draft. What did you see?
Well, it's not a curveball in our estimate, but I know Moritz wasn't rated highly in all the mock drafts, but we felt the top 5 kind of went as we thought it would, and it was only an educated guess. And after that, this next group of players, whether they're forwards, wingers, centers, or D-men, there's a good group. And we thought it could go in a lot of different directions. Ultimately, we had a chance to get a big, intelligent, smart, good skating defenseman. And we feel they're hard to find. So, we stepped up and took them.
But I do agree with that, though. Like, I remember when Calgary took Derek Moore's 9th and he was, like, rated 53rd. And they're like, well, that's where we have him.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a guy somewhere, take him. I do agree with that 1,000%.
I wonder if Tampa had him there, or I wonder if Detroit had him there. I guess that would be the question I have. So if you're a GM, you're all in to win. You take both lists. You have the benefit of having both of those lists because you worked for that organization previously. By all means, you take it. So I don't pertain to know which list it was taken from, but I do know this. I know Steve was on the road a lot. I know he watched a lot of guys in person. I know he had multiple viewings of a lot of guys. And so that's probably what made the decision where he's sitting there and he's looking at 2 lists and maybe Detroit did have him there. Maybe Detroit did have him there. Maybe Tampa had him there. But I think just the way Steve reacted to you in that question told me that that was a pick that he was pretty confident in making. Peyton Krebs is another guy with the
Achilles. I felt terrible
Achilles.
For that game.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But he's a guy who's going to play pissed off. He's going to guy who's going to
Oh, that's
gonna
a steal for Vegas.
Off.
Yeah, that's a steal.
I love that
Vegas.
Pick at 17 for Vegas. And, of course, I have to laugh because Kelly McCrimmon now, he spends a lot of time in Brandon with his Wheat Kings. He's now the general manager of Vegas. Where's Peyton Krebs going to play next year? Oh, yeah, Winnipeg. Interesting to see how that kind of worked out. His fingerprints are all over that Vegas franchise, by the way. Vasily Podkolzin. For me, if I'm a general manager, I'm taking him third. I believe that strongly in the player. Yes, the two-year contract doesn't bother me. He was going to play a year, not in the NHL next year anyways. See what happens after the next year. No problem with taking that pick. I love him. I think Vancouver got great value there. Unfortunately, they didn't get the reaction that maybe they expected, but I really love the player.
For a general manager who, you know, could be in his last year, I thought that was a ballsy pick for Jim Benning.
It was.
Do you like their second-round guy, the guy who dropped to them? The guy who can, on the unicycle?
Oh, Nils Höglander.
Yes.
Yeah.
The unicycle juggler or whatever the heck he is?
Yeah, some worry about his ability to score goals, but a lot of guys say he has great hands. So when you have great hands and don't score goals, maybe it's just a matter of maturing in the finish department, or maybe he's too busy in the weight room. One or the other. But yeah, I like that player. A lot of people had him considered to go in the first round. So at 40, I think there's also some value there. Ethan Kepin, Carson Folk, like those guys a lot. Folk I seen play a little bit, you know, this year and over the course of his career. So, you know, I think they did a good job there, Vancouver. But I think, you know, the highest value for them was getting Podkolzin at 10.
Next year, is there any doubt Lafreniere's number one pick?
Yes.
Okay, who we got?
So you got Holtz and Raymond are two Swedish players who for 2 years have just dominated as double underagers. Really, really impressive. Lindell Anton, I think is his first name, is a Finnish player who's really, really good. There's a guy by the name of Marco Rossi who plays in Ottawa. Cole Perfetti, 40-goal scorer with Saginaw here this year. The Ontario Hockey League with Quinton Byfield, I think, is going to have quite a resurgent year compared to what they saw this year. I would have said that in January, Lafreniere. I don't necessarily think that's the case now, and that's the two Swedes that I think are going to make a case for themselves.
Sam, anything I didn't ask you want to say?
Looking forward to Montreal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I got to tell you, Sam is a real trooper, staying up here while he's running his post-draft blog. And during the interview, I'm so sick of my suit, I took off my shoes.
Nice.
And you put up with that. I appreciate that. Because I've been standing around most of the last 2 days.
Yeah, no, we're all good. I just lean back.
All right, so that concludes the special post-draft edition of the 31 Thoughts podcast. Want to thank you, Sam. Want to thank Chris Johnson. Want to thank Peter Albus, New Jersey Devils, and Ray Shiro for doing the interview. Amel, great job. You know, we had a good week, I think, of podcasting here. We did a couple of interviews. We did a sit-down Jeff and I did with George Parros that we're going to release in a couple of weeks. But also, we've got Steve Meyer, who runs NHL Entertainment. We're excited about these interviews. These are both good. So thank you very much. Jeff, miss you. Thanks for understanding that we had to do one podcast without you. We miss you. We kind of like you. Thanks very much, everybody, for listening. This has been the 31 Thoughts podcast brought to you by GMC.